Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. Modern scientific discoveries have really buttressed what we know about God's creation of the universe and the human person. And of course, the crown of God's creation is man and woman. It is humanity. I want to delve into that a little bit deeper in this episode with the help of St. John Paul II. We're going to kind of look through the book of Genesis and the creation account through his eyes. And really, this is through something that he became associated with, something called the theology of the human body. This is really, really crucial for understanding God's plan for creation, and especially for human life and human flourishing. And this is really for everyone. The theology of the body, as it came to be known, is not just for married people. Because everybody has a body, the theology of the body is for you, it's for me, it is for everyone. We're not angels, you know, in more ways than one. We are embodied creatures as human persons. And Pope John Paul II, in his teaching on the theology of the body, which in many ways is just a big Bible study on the book of Genesis, he really wanted to answer three questions. Number one, what is the meaning of life? Number two, how can I be happy? And number three, how can I find true love? Hey, questions of life don't get any bigger than that, don't get any more important than those. And so that's why when John Paul II became Pope, he devoted the first major teaching project of his pontificate to this subject of what eventually became known as the theology of the body. Now, he didn't necessarily call it that, but that's what it was dubbed eventually. And it was 129 talks that he gave during his Wednesday general audiences between September of 1979 and November of 1984. He would meet with people, and anybody could attend these if you were in Rome, at the Paul VI Audience Hall. Up until now, up until recent years, it has become a bit of a secret, you know, to many. It's only now being explicated on a big scale because, not that people are trying to hide it or anything like that, but the Pope's thought in this area was deeply complex, very involved, and it took a little while, it took a few years to unpack it all. You know, while he was alive, John Paul II was considered by many people to be the world's leading philosopher, maybe, you know, in the top three or four philosophers in the world, if not the best, possessor of a staggering intellect. And if you've spent any time reading the writings of St. John Paul II, you know, his encyclicals or his other writings, you know that they can be intimidating sometimes to the average person. In fact, even scholars have trouble dissecting his thought. Sometimes it can go kind of whoosh, you know, right over your head. But as I said, lately, in recent years, people all over the world have taken up the challenge of putting the Pope's theology of the body into language that everyone can understand. And I'll try to do the same for you. It's crucial that this message gets out there to as many people as possible. George Weigel, who of course wrote a very famous biography of John Paul II called Witness to Hope, he called the theology of the body in that book, he called the theology of the body, quote, one of the boldest reconfigurations of Catholic theology in centuries, a theological time bomb set to go off with dramatic consequences, perhaps in the 21st century, end of quote. And that's exactly where we are right now, isn't it? And the Pope's teaching on human sexuality is certainly explosive. And it wasn't the first time that he had created a sensation in this arena. Back in the turbulent, you know, late 1950s and 1960s, those years that saw the so-called, quote-unquote, sexual revolution take place, with all of its talk of alleged sexual freedom. John Paul II, when he was still a young cardinal by the name of Karol Wojtyla, began the sexual counter-revolution, as it were, by writing a book called Love and Responsibility, which is all about the sexual embrace between man and woman. This book created a sensation in the Catholic world, and people started asking the question, who is this guy? It really might have been the one thing that began his meteoric rise to the chair, to the throne of St. Peter. And over the years, the Pope developed those ideas contained in Love and Responsibility until they became known as the theology of the body. So let's explore what this phrase means, if we're going to understand it, before we get into the creation accounts and sort of read them through the eyes of JP2, we need to understand what this phrase means, theology of the body. Now, of course, theology means the study of God or the science of God. And what the Pope is saying is that the human body tells us something about that. If it's a theology of the body, the human body can teach something to us, can reveal truths to us about who God is and what his plan is for our lives. And that plan is inscribed right into our very flesh. I don't know if you've seen the TV show Prison Break, but one of the characters in the show had all these tattoos on his body. And actually what it was a map of how to get out of the prison. Hey, it's a great way to store that map. You know, nobody can ever take it away from you. Well, the Pope is saying, and I'm not, you know, advocating for tattoos here or anything like this, but I'm just using it as an illustration. The Pope is saying that there is a plan inscribed, a path inscribed, if you will, into our very flesh, into our very bodies, to show us how to get to God. Now, when people start talking about theology of the body, they're very much shocked in a lot of cases. They say things like, what does the body have to do with my spiritual life? Many people have this idea that the body is somehow bad or evil and that the spirit only is good. When they think of spirituality, when they hear words like spirituality, they think about, you know, that Philadelphia cream cheese commercial you've seen on TV. What's heaven like? Sitting on a cloud, you know, maybe eating bagels with Philadelphia cream cheese spread on them. You know, that might be the only physical thing in heaven. Angels are strumming their harps nearby. You know, boring. You know, if that's what heaven is like, no wonder people don't seem too excited about it, especially if you don't like bagels and cream cheese. I mean, talk about a cheesy theology. Well, people who think that heaven is like this, disembodied, kind of an ethereal existence, kind of out there, you know, they think that their spiritual lives only involve their spirits or their souls. So they might start saying things like, my spiritual life is what I do on Sunday. I go to Mass, maybe say a few prayers, think about spiritual things for a bit, but as soon as Monday morning hits, I'm back to the real world. This is an attitude of compartmentalization. You know, there's one box over here, and that's my life in the quote-unquote real world. I've got my, you know, my hard hat in that box. I put that on Monday morning when I go to work. But on Sunday, I wear my spiritual hat. And that's a different thing altogether. And these two boxes are completely separate. Well, this is a heresy, actually. This is a false teaching. It's not the way it's supposed to be. The technical name for this is Gnosticism or dualism, and this is a heresy or false teaching that's been around really since the church got going. People who believe that the body is bad, the body is evil, the physical realm is evil, and only the spirit is good. And if you believe that, you fall into one of two camps usually. You either become extremely ascetic. That is, you know, saying the body is evil, so I must punish it so that I can focus exclusively on the so-called spiritual realm. And sometimes people who think this way go so far as to even hate the body, their own bodies. So they either become extremely ascetic or they become libertines. Hey, the body is evil. It's destined to be destroyed anyways. It can't really affect my spiritual life, so I might as well live it up. Sin and sin boldly. You know, after all, matter doesn't matter. What I do in my body can't affect my spirit. It can't affect me as a person. Well, this is a terrible attitude, that what I do with my body has nothing to do with my spiritual life. And that is exemplified by many today who claim to be into spirituality. They say, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. Some even claim to believe in Jesus Christ. But they engage in all kinds of different sexual relationships outside of proper marriage between a man and a woman. They see no conflict with that and their faith. Oh, it's just sex, after all. It's just something I'm doing with my body. It doesn't affect me as a person. And really what this is Cartesian dualism. And this is sort of a, you know, an inheritance from Gnosticism in a certain sense. You know, remember René Descartes, the Cartesian thought, I think, therefore I am. You might have heard that expression, I think, therefore I am. Well, that has now become what I think I am. Or another way of putting it, I am whatever I think I am. You know, you can change your reality. You can become another gender if you want, according to modern thinking. In fact, I even saw a poster in the city where I live that was put out by the government. And there was a young woman on the poster, and with one hand she was pointing to her forehead, to her mind. And the poster said, my sexuality is determined here, you know, pointing at her mind, pointing at her head, not here. With her other hand, she was pointing down below. In other words, what should be defining me sexually as a man or a woman, you know, based on my physical biology, no. That's not what defines me. It's what I think I am. It's who I think I am. This is the attitude that's infecting modern culture. I am whatever I think I am. Well, the Christian point of view, the Catholic point of view is God thought of you, therefore you are. You are who you are, and it's not an accident. It is not an accident. It's part of God's plan for you, even who you are, male or female. So this attitude that what I do with my body has nothing to do with my spiritual life is not, I repeat, not a Catholic attitude. The truth is that what you do with your body does affect you as a person, because the human person is a body-soul unity. Your body is you. You know, whatever good you do or whatever sins you commit are committed in the body. You know, think about this, you know, fornication, you know, adultery, pornography, abortion, destruction of human embryos through embryonic stem cell research or using them in vitro fertilization, homosexual acts, contraception. Think about even totalitarian regimes. You know, think about the Holocaust, the gas ovens, genocides that have happened all over the world. All of these are sins committed against the human body, and they're sins committed in the human body. And St. John Paul II lived through all of this himself. He lived through a regime, the Nazi regime in Poland. And one time he was even hit by a Nazi military truck and left for dead on the side of the road in a ditch. And thank God he survived and was able to bring the world the gifts that he had. But he lived through that. All of these horrific errors about the human person. There are bad errors about the human person in his day, and there are today as well. The truth is, though, that God thought so much of the human body. He thought it was so good that he took a body on himself. Now, of course, God the Father has no body, nor does God the Holy Spirit. But God the Son, who didn't have a body from all eternity, did take one on at the time of the Incarnation. And that's what we celebrate at Christmas, the fact that the Virgin Mary gave the Word flesh, to use an expression from the Gospel of John. In fact, Jesus still has this physical body today, resurrected from the dead and glorified, but still, he kept it, didn't throw it away. When the eternal Son of God took on a human body at the Incarnation, the body walked right into theology, right through the front door. and talk about a theology of the body, from that point on, in a sense, to think of the body from God's perspective takes on a whole new meaning, because God the Son has a physical human body. And just as Jesus retained his physical body through his resurrection and ascension into heaven, we will too. We will too. This is what our faith teaches us. Our bodies are not disposable containers for our souls. We don't just have to simply put up with them until we die and go to heaven, and then you get to sort of float around for all eternity. God wants you to keep your body. Now, don't worry. God will transform and glorify your body far better than, you know, Pilates or your local fitness club ever could. Every week at Mass, when we go to Mass on Sundays, we recite the Creed, the statement of our faith, what we supposedly believe with everything we've got, what we're willing to even die for. Well, the very last line of the Creed is, I believe in the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting. Do we ever stop to think about those words? Jesus wasn't the only person to be raised bodily from death. We all will be. We all will be. There's going to be a general resurrection of all people. Yeah, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as Clint Eastwood might say, the righteous and the wicked at the end of time on the last day. Our bodies will be reunited with our souls, and people will spend eternity in one of two places, heaven or hell. Look at Daniel chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Well, let's just look at verse 2 till 3. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. And that's Daniel 12, verses 2 and 3, one of the clearest passages in the Old Testament about the resurrection. In the New Testament as well, we have several passages on resurrection. Let me read one to you. And this is from John chapter 5. Jesus says this, truly, truly, this is John chapter 5, verse 25 and following. Truly, truly, I say to you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son also to have life in himself, and has given him authority to execute judgment, because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for the hour is coming when all who are in the tombs will hear his voice and come forth, those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of judgment. And St. Paul, of course, talks about this as well in his writings, that the judgment, we will receive our recompense for any good or ill that we have done in the body. So this is huge. There will be a resurrection of all people. So even in a sense, hell is a real physical place for a resurrected body, and heaven will be as well. 1 Corinthians 15 clearly tells us that we will all have resurrected bodies patterned after that of Christ. They're going to be the same as the bodies we had before, yet different. Continuity and discontinuity. It'll still be us, yet we will be changed, gloriously transformed. And of course, the model for this, again, is Jesus himself. After his resurrection, Jesus, you know, it was sometimes hard to recognize him. People were kept from recognizing him in certain times and places when he appeared. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why he kept the wounds of his ordeal, of his passion, so that people would know it was Jesus. Those wounds, the spear wound in his side and the nail prints in his hands and feet, are kind of his ID. That's how you know it's Jesus. Even though he was different, he was still Jesus. Even though he could appear somewhere at will, they knew it was him. And he was physical. Again, look at this from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 24. One of the times when Jesus appeared to his followers after the resurrection, he said, "Look at my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you can see that I have." And as he said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. While they were still incredulous for joy and amazed, he asked them, "Have you anything here to eat?" They gave him a piece of broiled fish. He took it and ate it in front of them. That's from Luke 24, verses 39 to 43. Later on, after Jesus ascended into heaven, Peter, while preaching, tells us that the apostles, quote, ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead. Acts 10:41, end of quote. So, folks, ghosts don't make food disappear. Jesus was real, physical, corporal. He was not a hallucination. He was not a figment of their imagination. He was real, a reality outside of their minds. They saw him, they touched him, they hung out with him, they ate with him. This is huge. The point of all this is that our bodies matter dearly to God. He created us to be embodied persons, and that plan is going to continue on for all eternity. God has put body and soul together, and what God has joined together, let no one separate. Our bodies have a future, and what we do with them now matters to God a great deal. We meet a lot of people, and I've alluded to this before, who say, "I'm not religious, I'm spiritual." You want to know what true spirituality is? Well, St. Paul tells us in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, he writes this, "I urge you, therefore, by the mercies of God, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship." So you want to know what your spiritual life is? You want to know what true spirituality is? It's the life you have in your body. It's what you're doing right now as you're listening to this program. You might be out for a run. You might be listening on the Relevant Radio app. You might be in your car, moving those pedals with your feet. You might be at work, taking a break, listening to the program. Whatever you're doing, it is spiritual. Your everyday walking around life. When you go to work, it's part of your spiritual offering to God. If you're a student, that's your coursework. That's your work. That's what you're offering to God. Think about it. Everything we do in the Catholic faith kind of plays on this and backs it up. When we genuflect, when we go into a church, we genuflect to the tabernacle. That is a sign that we worship God in our bodies. When we kneel to pray, it's an act of humility before Almighty God. When we make the sign of the cross over our bodies, when we dip our fingers into holy water and make that sign of the cross over ourselves, what are we doing? We're recalling our baptism, when our bodies were washed with pure holy water, but something happened. You know, that just as water signifies a cleansing and water signifies life, the stain of original sin, and if you're baptized as an older person, all actual sin is wiped away. And we are imparted with the life-giving Spirit of God. We remind ourselves of that when we bless ourselves with holy water. We do this because it is in the body. That's the locus of our worship of God. The liturgy was given to us so that we can worship God with our bodies. We consume with our bodies the body and blood, soul and divinity of Christ in the Eucharist. So if we worship God with our bodies, this has profound consequences for our sexual lives because our bodies are sexual, male and female. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. Genesis 1:27. What does this statement mean? And believe me, we have an enemy in the spiritual life, the devil. He does not want us to realize this. He does not want us, as men and women, to see the image of God clearly in our lives. And this is where Pope John Paul II made an absolutely stunning, a simply awesome statement. Now, obviously, Catholic theology has long maintained throughout all the centuries that we reflect the image of God as individuals, that we have rational souls, the ability to choose the good. That's what makes us different than the animals, who operate by sheer instinct alone. But the Pope said something in his Theology of the Body that simply blew people away. He said there's another way that humans image God. And it happens not just as individuals in the way that we image God that way, with our rational souls, but it happens in community. It happens actually in the sexual embrace of marriage between a man and a woman. If you're scratching your head a little bit, let me explain. The greatest mystery of our Catholic faith is the Holy Trinity. It's who God is, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Now think of a human family. In marriage, the husband and wife become one flesh through the marital embrace. The two become one, so much so that in 9 months you might have to give that one a name, as the theologian Scott Hahn likes to joke about. A baby can be conceived and born, a whole new human person can be brought into existence. And then there are what? Three in one. Three persons in one family. This is how humanity can image God in a profound way. The human family as an image of the Trinity, the divine family that is God. It's one of the great insights of St. John Paul II in his Theology of the Body. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. You can download all the past episodes on the Relevant Radio app, on relevantradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the show later on and share it with others. It's important to share the programming that we have on Relevant Radio because it's a great way, an easy way that we can share the gospel with others. We'll be back tomorrow with another great episode. Can't wait to talk to you then. Until next time, this is Cale Clark, and you've been listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio.